This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Little green men, robots with ray guns on their arms. Klingons! These are just a few examples of fictional life in outer space. But if you were given all the facts and numbers about another world, could you come up with a story about what life would be like up there?
As you all know, we live in a world of censorship, of regulations and rules. We are forced to believe everything we are taught and to never question it. Well, I'm here to tell you to do just the opposite.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll talk to some student short story authors who turned facts and a good imagination into prize-winning stories. We'll also spend an academic minute in a place we have a few more facts about, the oceans. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. Imagine that you've been given a set of facts about a new planet, and using those facts, you've been asked to create a story that would introduce us to whatever types of alien life you think might exist on that planet. Well, that's just what a very bright group of young people volunteered to do as part of the 2012 Astrobiology Short Story Contest. The competition is sponsored by the New York Center for Astrobiology, a member of NASA's Astrobiology Institute program headquartered at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York. The Best of Our Knowledge's science reporter David Gustina spoke about the students and their stories with John Delano, associate director of the New York Center for Astrobiology and a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Environmental Sciences in the Department of Chemistry at the University at Albany.
In this short story contest, we had two themes for the students to imagine. They needed to go through the idea of two planets, one with a large exomoon and the other a large planet orbiting two stars, and trying to imagine, using these two themes, if there was intelligent life on any of those worlds, what would it be like? What might they think? And we don't know yet, of course. NASA does not know yet whether intelligent life exists elsewhere in the galaxy. And that's been a topic, of course, of speculation in human history for thousands of years.
And your one key word there is intelligent life, right?
Because that's right.
I think we all agree, or at least many scientists do now, that we're going to find some sort of maybe microbial life before we find anything else.
That's right. It seems likely. We still don't know that yet.
Right.
But we now have the science and the technology to begin to imagine that within the next few years that we will be able to detect life of some description on planets light years away. We do not need to visit them. There is information coming probably from, for example, the composition of their atmospheres, the atmospheres of distant worlds, that will tell us whether life is there.
What struck you about each of these and what they wrote?
Their imaginations were superb. The stories were not only touching, accurate, as far as we could tell, of course, given the constraints of the themes that we provided, the masses of the worlds and the orbits and so forth. They were imaginative, thoughtful. They really engaged in the nature of these worlds as best as we can know them now.
I could see myself reading a novel from one of these young people.
Exactly. In New York State, for example, and perhaps many other school systems around the country, are increasingly asking students in various disciplines, science, languages, and mathematics, to write, to be able to write across the disciplines. And this was our attempt to not only have students engage in the mathematics and the astronomy, but then to wrap their heads around the meaning of those results, to invent a story.
Tell me about the teachers of these students. They must respond favorably. Obviously, they must be encouraging them to do this, and how they feel about a contest like this and how it helps supplement what they're doing.
The teachers themselves are just exceptional. I've had the privilege of meeting two of them so far and communicating, of course, with all of them. But they have one thing in common. They are engaged. They are inspiring. They are thoughtful. They care.
And it's not without its reward, is it?
That's right. We want to celebrate the intellect, imagination, skill, and literary acumen of these three students that we've selected as the winners. That's right. So they'll be receiving this cash prize, a special luncheon, certificates, and two books that are really timely, and we hope that the students will enjoy them.
John Delano is an associate director of the New York Center for Astrobiology and a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Environmental Science Sciences in the Department of Chemistry at the University at Albany. He spoke with the Best of Our Knowledge's science reporter, David Gustina, about the 2012 Astrobiology Short Story Contest.
Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along for a ride?
So who are these students, and what new worlds and creatures did they write about? David got a chance to sit down with the winners and find out.
Here in the studio with some special young people, Samantha Sibeli, an 11th grader from Burnt Hills Ballston Lake High School, Morgan Lee Braley from Red Hook High School, and Ariana Ray, an 11th grader from Hastings-on-Hudson. Each of these are the winners in the 2012 Astrobiology Short Story Contest, and they're right here in front of me right now. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I want to start with Samantha. Now, tell us a little bit about how you got introduced to the contest and a little bit about your entry, and then perhaps you might tell us the title of your story and read us a little excerpt.
Okay. I was introduced to this contest through my science research teacher at my high school, Mrs. Reels, and I thought it would be a great opportunity incorporating science and fiction, just a fun thing to do.
Yeah, and you have two scenarios, right, that you could choose,
yes.
A or B. Which one did you choose for your story?
I chose the first one about the exomoon. I did some research and found out just what types of exomoons could house, you know, habitable life, and what types of stars they would be around and what type of planets they'd also be around.
Can you give us an example that might be an extreme example from your story and about the planet?
Well, I used the star Wolf 359, and this is like a red giant star. So there's different types of stars, not just the types of stars that we're familiar with, like the sun. So I used this star because it was a red giant, and a lot of astronomers are looking at these types of stars because their planets could be a lot closer to the stars to house life. So I thought that would be interesting to do a story on. And then I made up the names of the planets and the exomoon.
Tell us their names.
Julak was the planet that I used, and it was a Jovian-type planet, which is like a Jupiter or Saturn. And then Rorda was the exomoon, the name I came up with for that, which was a terrestrial type.
So tell us the name, the title of your story.
A Cyclic Secret was the name of my story.
And that leads us to understand something about this planet, doesn't it, even in the title?
Yes. So the main story is that every 400 years, there's a revealing of sorts where the clouds open up and people can see the sky, because usually there's clouds covering and they're kind of in the dark, I guess.
And we can all imagine what it might be like, some of us more than others in certain parts of the country, would it be like if the clouds didn't break for 400 years, right? So you have that, and it seems like you've worked into that story that this revealing, as you call this, is a major event for the society that's living on this planet.
Yes, and for most of the people in the society, they don't really know about the revealing because the society wants to keep it hidden from them. So the two main characters, Phoebus and Loka.
Phoebus and Loka.
Yes. They find out about this revealing and that they'll be able to see other worlds in this big glowing fireball in the sky. And they want to tell other people about it and tell the society that, you know, there's more than just what they're living in, because these people, they actually live underground in the exomoon.
And one of the characters, is it Loka that's a little bit of an outsider?
Yeah, she's an outcast, and it's rumored that her family lives above ground in the unseen village.
Those strange people who live above ground.
Yes.
Well, this is exciting. Give us a little excerpt, will you? Read a little bit for us.
So this is when Loka and Phoebus decide to tell the society about the revealing. So the next day, Loka transmitted an announcement throughout the town advising people of Rorda to report to the square. As the crowd gathered, Loka took the stage. As you all know, we live in a world of censorship, of regulations and rules. We are forced to believe everything we are taught and to never question it. Well, I'm here to tell you to do just the opposite. In order to understand our own purpose, we must look to understand places far beyond us. With a nod from Loka, Phoebus lowered the level, and the dome concealing the town square from the surface lifted above the people of Rorda's heads. Above them was the tiny opening in the sky where the bright blue orb of Julak lay in the forefront of a red glowing ball of fire. Wolf 359.
Did you think about how you're saying we have to question things? Did you think about that in terms of the science?
Yes.
So there's a message there that seems like a broader message mm-hmm. to the society that you've created in the story, but goes right back to what you are doing yourself, which is exploring and questioning and not accepting everything at face value.
Yeah.
Still to come, more of David Gustina's conversation with the winners of the 2012 Astrobiology Short Story Contest. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past shows again, you can find us online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. You can start your own archive with a CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for The Best of Our Knowledge, number 1164. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Today we're hearing from the winners of the 2012 Astrobiology Short Story Contest. Let's listen into more of our science reporter David Gustina's conversation with the contest winners.
We turn now to Ariana Ray, who is an 11th grader from Hastings-on-Hudson. And your story is titled The Expedition to Morden, and you dealt with the other theme, theme B.
Yeah.
Explain a little bit about theme B.
I thought it would allow me to be a little more loose with the fiction and just play around a little instead of building it so much around the facts. But I still like had fun with the facts. So, yeah, I just made a funny little story.
Tell us a little bit about your own initiative here, because I know that you were able to find out about this particular contest through Cornell, through their website.
Well, they sent my mom an email, and so then my mom forwarded me the email, so it was kind of like indirectly from them. So then I started working on it. It seemed like a fun story.
Well, tell us about it.
It's basically the story of a small planet, and the people there are sort of fun-loving creatures. They're kind of, I mean, they're obviously clever enough to have the technology to bring them to another planet, but they're sort of gentle people. And
What are they called?
They're called Argurians. I didn't think about the fact that I'd have to pronounce them sometime when I was writing them.
That's not your problem.
Yeah, I'm not sure to pronounce them myself.
Argurians.
They must exist. Yeah, they must. Whatever I say goes, I guess,
because
I'm the author.
Especially in a fictional story.
Yeah.
But obviously, it couldn't just be fiction. There has to be the facts surrounding this exoplanet. So tell us more.
Yeah, so the exoplanet I made up, so it's called Morden. And I made the mass half as much as Arguria, so the gravitational force is like halved as well. So the Arguria. Yeah,
wait a minute now. You're in 11th grade, and that just went right by me. I don't think any of the parents and mentors are standing here going, what? Explain that a little more.
Well, the gravitational law is like mass 1, mass 2 over distance squared times the gravitational like factor. So if you half the mass of one of them, one of the bodies,
yes,
then the gravitational force is halved as well.
So there was a certain amount of serious research going on here. Now, how do you go about that? You have a mentor?
I took an astronomy class in school, and I also did a lot of research on the internet.
Yes.
I had a lot of trouble figuring out how the planets were orbiting. But it sort of worked that out, I think.
Again, the title of the story is The Expedition to Morden. Do you have maybe a little bit that you could read to us?
Yeah, I guess I should tell you about my characters first.
Yeah, sure.
So there's a king whose name is Hraugrim, which I can't pronounce.
Yes, but, and he's sleeping in the beginning or something. And the queen is eating.
No, the king is eating as well. The captain is sleeping.
Oh, the captain is sleeping, right.
His name is Grumirk. That's pretty much it. The queen's name is Arzanon. Okay. Everything was ready, at last. Grumirk had collapsed into a chair somewhere within the palace, and now King Hraugrim was ready to give his speech to the Argurians of Arguria. Throwing the huge palace doors open with great effort, Hraugrim shuffled out onto the wide stone patio. Argurians cheered wildly and shook their bellies in approval. "Ahem," began Hraugrim. He was struggling to read his speech over his great stomach, the pride and joy of his planet. Finally balancing the papers on his belly, Hraugrim began again. Ahem. Today is a great day, people of Arguria. For decades and decades, we have kept to ourselves peaceably and intelligently as our sister planet Morden shared our vast orbit around Belfun the Lightgiver. But 5 years ago, our scientists created groundbreaking technology that will forever change this planet. Citizens, we are going to Morden. Today. The crowd went ballistic, grinning from earhole to earhole. Hargrim waddled back into the palace to pack his bags. The desert was vast, endless land beneath endless dusky sky, illuminated by the light of two great stars. Far, far away, gray mountains loomed over a lavender sea, and sands melted into grassy plains. Save for the empty howling wind, all was silent on the planet Morden. Well, almost silent. Some leagues off from a particularly impressive crag of rock, a few fuzzy sounds could be heard. The noises were accompanied by strange silhouettes, a shuttle, a picnic table, and a line of curious creatures who all appeared to be bouncing. King Hargrim the Munificent was one of those bouncing creatures. So was the stately Grimrick, much to his own dismay. In fact, upon setting foot on Morden, all the Arguerians had been stunned, or overjoyed in Princess Morini's case, to find themselves far lighter than they were on their home planet. Bellies wobbling, arms flapping, the brave expedition hopped over to the nearest scientist and demanded of him a thorough explanation. Morden's mass is half of Arguria's, the hapless Arguerian has stammered. That means that the gravitational force acting on us will be halved. We are half as light on this planet. After a brief explanation of what exactly gravity was, all had been settled. Gathering some supplies from the shuttle and what was left of their great stores of courage, the Arguerian mission tossed a coin and trooped off towards the setting of Belfun the Second that lay far off somewhere to their right.
Some of the descriptions, the adjectives in describing are wonderful.
Thank you.
He waddled over. I love that he says, ahem, ahem. Yeah. That's great. So, you know, clearly you have these two disciplines that are merging. Science and literacy and literature and literary writing. Did you consider, did that make it more interesting to you, for example, Ariana, when you learned about the contest?
Yeah, I do enjoy writing, so I thought that was also another incentive to write a fun story.
Well, last but not least, we have Morgan Lee Braley. She's from Red Hook High School, and her story is entitled Homecoming, and you also dealt with theme A. Well, tell us more about how you got involved and why you chose to do this contest, and then a little bit about the story.
For my astronomy class, one of our assignments was to do this as a project, and I decided to have fun with it because I really like to write.
So as you're looking at these two themes, theme A jumped out at you. How come?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly. I think one of them had more to do with facts, and I hate to research. So I decided to go more with being creative.
So tell us a little bit about your story and the idea that came into your head.
The first thing I did when we were given the assignment was to start sketching out little alien creatures. I've been doing that all class anyway. And I decided on these fat little bear-like things, and they were really cute. And then I sketched out their planet and what it might be like there. And I just went with it and wrote a little story about a fat little bear thing.
Well, was it called a bear thing? What did you call this thing?
I didn't name any of them. It's all up to the imagination.
Oh, so a little bit different. So we have characters in the other stories. You've left a little bit of that out.
Yeah.
Tell us a little more about the story.
Well, I don't really know how to describe it. I just follow the little creature. I just call him a creature the whole time because they haven't been discovered by us. So they have no names. And he leaves his little icy village and goes out to find the middle of the planet where it's more habitable for his species. And he finds descendants of his tribe where they've lost their fur and are living more peacefully in a warmer climate.
Let's hear a little excerpt of this story.
I like the descriptions I used where he like is starting to find the warmer area. The clouds whooshed in the wind overhead as the furry creature shuffled on. After a ways, the ice was more clear and rough shapes of water-dwelling animals could be seen lurking in the darkness. Something particularly massive swam directly below the furry mammal, flicking what he supposed was a great tongue hungrily in his direction. He nervously picked up the pace, scampering on, until he reached where the ice was covered in a thin layer of liquid water. He ventured back to the shore where the snow was gradually melting and small plants were beginning to grow. This is what he'd been waiting to find for so long, the lush vegetation and then the sprawling warm lands of the south. The trees were thin and only about 4 to 5 feet high, a sickly yellow-white color, and grew long, stringy tendrils, which reached into the ground to form new trees of this type. Bushes were shorter but wider, with thin gray branches exploding randomly from a thick trunk, keeping low to the ground. The snow eventually would melt away to reveal a fine black sand hidden underneath the building precipitation further north. The mammal marched on, soon coming across small huts woven from the strange vines of the surrounding trees. A female of his own species shuffled out of the nearest hut, sniffing curiously.
Boy, what imagery. Yeah. And the idea of this journey and seeing things as they change. Fascinating. We've been speaking with Morgan Lee Braley. Her story is Homecoming. And we also heard from Ariana Ray, an 11th grader from Hastings-on-Hudson. And we heard a little bit of her story, The Expedition of Morden, and Samantha Sibelli, also an 11th grader from Burnt Hills Boston Lake High School. And her story was A Cyclic Secret. They're the three winners of the 2012 Astrobiology Short Story Contest, and they have just been a delight.
Those were the winners of the 2012 Astrobiology Short Story Contest, speaking with the Best of Our Knowledge's science reporter, David Gustina, as part of our Astrobiology series on the origins of life. Our coverage is made possible by the NASA Astrobiology Institute through support from the New York Center for Astrobiology, located at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York, in partnership with the University of Albany, the University of Arizona, and Syracuse University. You can learn more about all the topics in our astrobiology series at origins.rpi.edu. If you're looking for a place with lots of water and oxygen, just stay here on Earth and check out the oceans. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Welcome to the Academic Minute. I'm Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. Although they live underwater, most sea creatures are just as dependent on oxygen as those of us who live on land. Timothy Lyons, professor of biochemistry at the University of California, Riverside, reveals a surprising find about historic oxygen levels and explains what it means for our understanding of the history of life in the ocean.
The oldest signs of animal life appear in the geologic record around 600 million years ago. For the 4 billion years prior, our planet experienced dramatic changes that paved the way for this milestone in our own existence. Yet most of us take these changes for granted. One such transformation was the first rise of oxygen about 2.5 billion years ago, perhaps the single most important environmental change in history. Before then, Earth's atmosphere and oceans were virtually devoid of this life-giving gas, which now makes up 20% of the air we breathe. My research group is exploring the evolving compositions of the early atmosphere and oceans. Our favorite questions center on the cause and effect relationships between life and its environment across the critical middle chapters of Earth history, the roughly 2 billion years between the first production of oxygen via photosynthesis and the first appearance of animals. Our work shows us that the initial rise of oxygen may have occurred in fits and starts rather than a single step, and that once permanently present in the atmosphere, oxygen likely rose to very high levels and then plummeted. 1.5 billion years of oxygen-free conditions in the deep ocean resulted and set a challenging course for the simple microscopic inhabitants. Then, about 600 million years ago, thanks perhaps to a flush of nutrients to the ocean in the wake of history's greatest ice age, life and photosynthesis flourished, oxygen took another step up, and animals first hit the scene. Darwin was long troubled in his efforts to explain this initial explosion of animal life. He would be pleased to know that ancient rocks, in fact, reveal the history of life's initial ups and downs that set the stage, in so many ways, for the later evolution of animals. The story of the ancient ocean is the story of our origins, and it may just tell us a thing or two about the challenges in our future.
That was Timothy Lyons of the University of California, Riverside. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors on our website, academicminute.org.
Production support for the Academic Minute comes from Newman's Own Foundation in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Shartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.